Tom Woods Show, episode 1906.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, Tom Woods here. Today we're going to discuss a brand new book called The Enduring Tension, Capitalism and the Moral Order by our guest Donald Devine. He's been a professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland. He's also taught at Bellevue University. And in 1981, he was appointed by Ronald Reagan as director of the U.S. Office of Personnel Management. And in the book, The Enduring Tension, he takes on many of the arguments that have been leveled against capitalism over the years. And well, frankly, he levels them. Don Devine, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Tom. Appreciate it.
All right, let's dig into this, because this book, The Enduring Tension, deals with some issues that I've dealt with for quite some time, and I have a book, The Church of the Market, from 16 years ago, that it may not be clear to the average reader, but I intended that book actually not as a corrective to, let's say, social democrats or even outright socialists in the Catholic Church, but I was actually aiming that book at traditionalists. I considered myself to be one. Because I was concerned about some of the arguments that people on the right were making about the market economy. I thought they were, I understood where they were coming from, but I thought by and large the arguments either reflected some kind of a misunderstanding or were misplaced or were going to cause other problems. So I actually want to start right there, if I may. I know that if I go on Twitter and I follow some typical Hollywood celebrity, I'm going to hear every bit of nonsense ever conceived when it comes to capitalism. Much more interesting to me are the kinds of arguments that these days we hear coming from some wings of conservatism, where they almost look with contempt on people like you and me because they think we're not sophisticated enough to understand that we're just repeating talking points from the 1980s, and that these days it's become clear that we need this and that done to capitalism. Surely you've noticed that the consensus about the moral or even material value of capitalism in 2021 is not what it was in 1981 on the right. To the contrary, we have critics from a nationalist point of view who think the market economy undermines the working class, it undermines the United States' well-being in particular. They think it is responsible for the undoing of the moral order of the United States. I mean, you're surely familiar with these. How do you respond to them?
No, certainly. A lot of the book is really an answer to the right. As you say, going to people way on the left is probably just a waste of time anyway. But it really is the right that is more confused about what's going on today than anybody else. It's amazing to me the faith that they have, the government is going to solve everything. Of course, it's not surprising. I mean, from grade school to high school to college to graduate school, that's what they're told, is the government's going to solve everything. I'm sitting here today, I have a copy of the Washington Post, which really should be read by people on the right, because they're writing for the hometown here about government. And they admit things like that. This headline just hit me this morning. We just need our government to catch up. That's the headline. I mean, the point is, government passes all these wonderful sounding things, but it doesn't work. You know, Ronald Reagan appointed me the head of the civil service, and I got to know really how government works or doesn't work. But it's not, you know, just the right that understands this. I mean, a lot of the progressives themselves, and we should read them because it's interesting what they have to say. Another Post columnist a couple of days ago talking about the testimony in Congress over the riots at the Capitol. And she said all the experts came up there, the head of the FBI, the head of Capitol Police, the intelligence agencies. She said they all came up there and they all said nothing. And unfortunately, that's what's going on. And that's why the country is in so much trouble. They're putting all their hopes and fears and worries on the government, and the government can't do it. And that's why I spend in my book a whole chapter on my experience in the bureaucracy. And I went back again at the end of the Trump administration. It's much worse than it was then. Back then it couldn't. And in the book, I go through all to the last quarter century of how the basic element, the FBI, it used to be the FBI was the perfect agency. And I mean, it's no secret to anybody now of all its problems, but Federal Reserve is at the end. The head of the Federal Reserve goes and testifies before Congress a couple of days ago and says, we can't solve our problems with monetary policy. That's what the Federal Reserve is supposed to do, monetary policy. That we need fiscal, but we need you guys to spend more money. Well, that means he doesn't have the answers. And the Center for Disease Control, and I mean, you just go down the litany of every agency, and I go through most of them. They don't work. And they don't work, so it would be bad enough if they don't work, but they pass rules for the private sector, so it can't work. And, you know, that's why, you know, to me, what we're doing today, we're looking at the end of an era. That progressivism about 100 years ago, we put in the Federal Reserve so we never had another recession or depression. Of course, we've had a dozen since then. And we set up the great institutions, the central government institutions in the White House, Budget and Accounting Act sets up the whole, we're going to run the whole country now with federal power and studies. But we don't. The studies, anyone who knows about science knows that science doesn't have answers. Science goes and investigates things and gives you answers in terms of probabilities. And if it's probability, it means it isn't perfect. It's a probability. And that's why, to me, the kind of only solution is to get back to the institutions the Constitution set up. The Constitution set a very, very limited national government. 11, a dozen or so specified right in the Constitution what they're supposed to do. And look around, most of what we do in the government is not what was in the national government. It was not in the Constitution. Well, if we want to do it, let's pass an amendment. That's what the Constitution said. Our Constitution is based on federalism, is that we're getting out of the national government, relying on states, relying on counties, relying on local governments, and very much we're relying on the private sector and people, both the economic private sector and the voluntary association sector. That's what was great when the great analyst Alexis de Tocqueville came over. He came over to find it where the national government was. He went all around the country. He couldn't find it. He said, all I can find is local governments. That's all they need. That's what they do. And really, mostly, they don't even do governments. They have private associations and the market. I mean, we've moved so far away from that in the last century. The whole progressive movement that's been taught in the schools, started by Woodrow Wilson, the president, who before that was the head of Princeton University. This has been going on a long time down the road, and it gets worse and worse as it goes on. My old boss, Ronald Reagan, tried to stop it, and it worked. We had what were called the seven growing years, 25 years, really, from Ronald Reagan until we went off the track somewhere around the second Bush administration. We had a real bad Great Recession, we called it. And we've been struggling through. We had a couple of good years under Trump, who tried to open some things up, And now I think we're seeing the end of the game. Here we have President Biden wanting to spend $6 trillion. I mean, we didn't even have $1 trillion a decade ago or so. But it ain't going to work. I just wrote a column published on Friday saying it isn't going to work. My experience, and I watched this government from around Washington, been in the government twice, it doesn't work. And again, if you just read the Washington Post, don't believe me, or the Brookings Institution, the premier progressive institution, its main studies show that it doesn't work. The great professor, Paul Light, he's a progressive, but he's an honest one. He looks at it and he says, this doesn't work. He has two major studies there. He has three major, major studies he did for the Democratic Congresses earlier. Anyone who seriously looks at the federal bureaucracy today knows it doesn't work. As Professor Light says, the basic problem is we have, he says 70 levels, is probably more like 50, but whatever it is, there are 50 levels or so between the person at the top, the secretary of a department who wants to do something, and he has to translate that down 50 levels of government with no mechanism to measure what's going on there other than a performance appraisal system where they judge each other and everybody admits that doesn't work a while under Reagan, but not long even then. As the great Ludwig von Mises wrote a little book called Bureaucracy of Yale University Press almost a half a century ago. I said, the difference is the private sector has a measurement devices to go through multiple layers, although they have very fewer labels and levels than the national government does. They have a thing called profit and loss. And if something in the middle of there is losing a lot of money, you find that out very quickly because you have something to measure it with. It's what makes the private sector really work. It's got an internal mechanism where you can find out where things aren't going right, gives you a chance to correct it. We don't have that in the government. It's a basic fundamental differences he makes very clear there between the two. And it was in there. One of the big things, I'll give credit to Democrat Jimmy Carter. He's the one that put in a new performance appraisal system for the government when he was president. Unfortunately for him, he went out of office before I went in, and I walk in there and take over the civil service for Ronald Reagan, and he's got a whole new performance appraisal system he's worked on for 3.5 years. And it did work, probably only 4 or 5 years very well. It's very hard to get people in the bureaucracy to rate each other honestly. I mean, the natural thing is to rate people, everybody fine. You don't want to make anybody angry at you. But that's the only way you have to communicate to find out what people are doing below you. Again, in the private sector, you've got a very simple thing. Are they making a mistake? Are they making a profit? If they're not, you get rid of it or change it. Now, what happens in the government if you do find out something isn't going down multiple layers? What do? You cut it back? No. What do we say? Hey, we're not doing enough to do all this good we're supposed to be doing. So you throw more money at it. It's a mechanism. Now, we need government, and we need to have government work on important things, foreign policy, defense, some interstate commerce stuff. All right, we need it to work well in what it does. But as our founders understood, you got to give them only a few functions. And some of the great public administration experts, which I studied in graduate school, they understand this. If you give the government too many things to do, you confuse it. And that's what happened to the FBI. The FBI used to have one function, which was to support the Department of Justice in cases that are brought before court. But we later gave the FBI a charge of being the Domestic Intelligence Service. Those are two totally different things. At the time when it was proposed, I argued and said, create a different thing like MI5 did in England. Create a different agency so you don't confuse functions. And we just saw what happened over the last few years the FBI, and more were realizing, hey, those are two different functions, and the FBI can't do both, and they're very different kind. I go into that quite a bit in the book. So we have a system that the founders set up to have a government, but limited at the national level, and actually limited in state and local too. Most of what we do should be done privately in families and groups and associations and businesses. But we do need government too. But we can't kid ourselves. This isn't magic. Too many people think of science as some kind of magical solution to things. It can help us, but it can't solve it. The only way you can solve, especially social personal problems, is where people are looking at each other. They understand each other. That's why local government, even as much as we've taken over, we still have more local government than much of the world. And it's why we still have some a good thing. We still have some strength in our families, although they're weakening. So there are many challenges, but let's challenge with the institutions that work. If you have a social problem, a social need, you got to be close to them. And the only way you can do it is things like family, neighborhood. When my boss, Ronald Reagan, ran for office the first time, his slogan was, what are we all about as Americans? He said, God, family, freedom, neighborhood, work. Take those five institutions, God, family, freedom, neighborhood, work. Well, that says it all to me.
Hey, folks, let's take a quick minute to thank our sponsor, Skillshare. Skillshare would have seemed like something out of science fiction just 30 years ago. Skillshare offers thousands of inspiring classes for creative and curious people on topics including illustration, design, photography, video, freelancing, entrepreneurship, and more. These classes tend to be nice and short and to the point. They combine video lessons with a class project. They have classes to fit your schedule and skill level. And one membership gets you access to every single one of them. For the sake of one of my daughters, who's very creative and has numerous interests and she's good at all of them, I recently took Martina Flores' class, Be Your Own Boss, Strategies for Launching Your Creative Career, to find some golden nuggets to help her out if she should ever want to launch a creative career. Super affordable, high quality, and immensely satisfying. Well, explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/woods and get a free trial of premium membership. That's a free trial of premium membership at Skillshare.com/woods. When I'm dealing with the kind of people, let's say on the right, who are critical of the market economy and they blame it for some of the ills they perceive, I can go one by one. I can go through their various complaints. I know a lot of them favor family leave legislation, stuff like that, and I can address those particular points. But if I have just 60 seconds and I have to summarize exactly why they shouldn't think the way they're thinking, the way I put it is this, that since the progressive era, the presumption has been that experts ought to be running society, and we need expert guidance, and we need more of that and less. What the progressives hated the most was any form of populism, because that interferes with the smooth functioning of society and its operation by experts. So if there's some aspect of society you're unhappy about, number one, chances are there is no political solution or there is no economic system that's going to solve that problem. And as conservatives, you'd think they would be humble enough to realize some problems are beyond politics. But secondly, I would say there are two ways of solving the problem, or there are two ways of running society. One is, let people make their choices and live with the consequences of those choices. That's one way. The other way would be to nitpick every market outcome and try to have the state guide society in another direction. And what that does is simply empowers the expert class, the expert in quotation marks. That empowers them. And let me tell you something. That expert class is not made up of conservatives. It is not made up of libertarians. It is made up of people who can't stand the sight of you. So if what you want to do is empower those people to exercise more power over society in the name of fixing capitalism's problems, I think you're digging your own grave. That's my answer.
Well, I couldn't disagree with one word.
All right. Okay. That's just what I wanted to hear. Let me ask you, though. I mean, I know we said we weren't going to say too much about left-wing stuff, but Pope Francis does govern what, if he's being honest, he has to realize is possibly the most conservative institution in Western history, the Catholic Church. There is nothing leftist about the Catholic Church. I mean, talk about trying to bash a round hole into a square peg, although he's certainly given it a shot. He criticizes what he calls the, quote, possessive individualism of capitalism. And this is the kind of thing very common on the left that has just got to be called out for the distortion that it is. Capitalism does not involve possessive individualism because it makes no value judgments. Capitalism is about private property and freedom of contract. That's what it is. It doesn't say you have to accumulate all the material wealth you possibly can. You have to charge the highest price you can possibly get away with. You have to not be charitable and keep all your money like a miser. It doesn't make any of these value judgments, none whatsoever. It simply says that it's best for people. Well, in fact, it doesn't even say it's best. It's not making value judgments. I'll make a value judgment. I think it's best when people, if I may, in a way, quote Pope John Paul II, treat each other as ends rather than means. And that's what capitalism does. It does not say, well, I have this grandiose way of organizing society, so I'm going to seize your wealth and issue commands to you. Well, no, that's treating you like a means. I treat you like an end under capitalism. I say you have goals and dreams and aspirations of your own, and you should be free to pursue those without outside interference because you are an end in yourself. That's the way I view it. I don't understand this idea that capitalism teaches us to be greedy. It doesn't teach us anything. It says keep your mitts off other people. That's all it teaches.
Well, as you know, you've read the book. I mean, I spend a lot of time answering Pope Francis. He's written some serious books on it. And I think the only way to deal with it is deal with each of the issues as he raises them and answers them. I like your nice summary of it. I mean, capitalism is a means. Unfortunately, a lot of things are called capitalism, which aren't. He grew up in Argentina.
Yeah.
And Argentina talked about having markets, but the government controlled the markets. And he confuses what the government is doing to the market and calling it capitalism. And businessmen calling themselves capitalists when they're actually pretty much arms of the government. So there's a lot of misunderstanding about capitalism, and that's why I wrote the book and why it's a pretty tough book to read. I'll admit it deals with serious issues in a serious way, and I think that's what conservatives need to do today. We've lived off the great legacy of our Constitution and great writers, our founders, founders of capitalism, Adam Smith, around the same time as our Constitution. We've gone away from it, and we got to stop kidding ourselves. I mean, as you said, progressivism is the doctrine that's taught in the schools. We have to educate ourselves, and we have to have the right answers in detail if we're ever going to turn this around. I mean, $6 trillion we're talking about spending, it'll crush the economy. We're sending extra money on unemployment insurance so people won't work when we're trying to have the economy recover. I mean, this is just basic stuff. But we need to have the answers. We can't just do slogans. And that's why I wrote this kind of book. One of the reviewers said it's like a whole history and political science and philosophy. It's all of that wrapped up in one. Well, It may be a little deep reading, but it does cover all those things, saves you from buying six or seven books.
Yeah, I agree. By the way, I want to correct you in the sense that I don't want to dissuade people from reading it, thinking that it's going to be too dense for them. My audience will eat this up. It makes argument after argument after argument against some of the most common claims for government power. And it's very, very valuable in that sense. Well, I want to close because of the time I promised we would spend together with this kind of question. You mentioned Ronald Reagan several times. Reagan is known for saying government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem. And I wonder if in 2021, as a slogan, that's starting to ring a bit hollow in the following sense, that today we have the problem of we have big tech giants that are suppressing dissident voices. We have the private sector where there are plenty of business firms where it's very difficult to work because they're going to pry into your, they're going to demand that you have the vaccine. And if you even have an objection to that, they're just going to make your life miserable, or they're going to monitor your social media. And if you have a tweet they don't like, you're out on your ear. You have to censor yourself. You get emails all the time about diversity training. Maybe the situation we face is a little more complicated than that slogan from the early 80s. How do you update that for 2021?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what to put, and I was a political consultant, a top paid one for a little while in the country. I'm not sure I know the political answer, but what I do know is that we have to well understand what we are about. I think it does go back to government in the sense that Woodrow Wilson, and genius, probably the second most important intellectual we had since the founding, he put together a program of these experts you talked about running the government. That idea is his idea in the late 19th century. And he got his fellow heads of universities, of the key universities, they met together, they worked together, created the American Society for Public Administration, the American Political Science Association, helped find them in other. They thought through something, and we've tested it for a century now, and now we know it doesn't work. But they created this new idea, and we have to find a way to say, how do we get back to the Constitution and limited government that made America so much greater than ever the rest of the world? There are new challenges, but what's behind it is this idea that government experts can use science to solve everything. And that's the way that we have to look at what they're saying, and we have to come up with answers to those questions.
Well, fair enough. So I guess we'll leave it there, and I would encourage people to read the book, because I'm telling you, it makes so many valuable arguments against the kinds of commonplaces about capitalism, the kinds of things you just see all the time or you hear your friends saying, and it just smashes them to smithereens. So the book is The Enduring Tension, Capitalism and the Moral Order by our guest, Donald Devine. Don, thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Tom, and keep up the great work here.
All right, folks, before we wrap up for today, a sad note. My friend Robert Wenzel, who was the editor of two websites I visited multiple times daily, namely economicpolicyjournal.com and targetliberty.com, has died. He passed away early this week. This is May 2021 when I'm recording. And he went peacefully in his bed, but very much unexpected, at least to me and many people who knew him. But he did very, very good work. I would say I agreed with him probably 85 to 90% of the time, but I always welcomed his insights. And as I say, I got a lot of great inspiration from his websites that I visited on a regular basis. I learned a lot. I kept up with the news. I got some interesting analysis. And Bob defended me against critics repeatedly, and I always appreciated that. So rest in peace, Robert Wenzel. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.